It's showtime, folks.
HTF Radio and thehometheaterforum.com presents the DVD Marquee with your host, Jeffrey Rosato. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the program. My name is Jeffrey Rosato, and hope you guys had a nice Labor Day holiday last week. Labor-free, hopefully. But it is back to the grind, kind of. I've got a very special interview that I've teased. I believe I have teased this interview with George Feltenstein more times than, say, 10 years of fall promos for a new television series. But I wanted to wait until the right time to drop this upon you guys, and the time is now. For those of you not in the know, for those of you who don't totally absorb the credits in DVD liner notes, CD soundtrack liner notes, and what have you, George is a groundbreaker. He's been in the home video business for almost 20 years now. My goodness, he's going to take us through his career, which began in a theater exhibition. And it's not only a study and a dream come true for a guy that's just a bigger fan of classic films and current film fare as the rest of us are, but it also serves as kind of a history of how the home video business has evolved from the days of VHS to DVD, the here and now. But before we get into the interview, I'm going to have to tell you guys that the first half of this interview is going to be slightly rough quality-wise. Technical gremlins were biting us in the butt when we started this. To give you an idea of how rough sound-wise the first half of this interview was, I spent like 6 hours cleaning it up. And it's still not perfect, but it's listenable. And even though the second half is more clearer, it's marred by a little bit of hiss, which I've removed to the best of my ability. But George is just so full of enthusiasm and great stories that it's going to override any oral discrepancies completely. It was a dream come true to talk to this gentleman, and I am so excited to welcome to the Home Theater Forum a chat with a gentleman that has been responsible for bringing us the likes of great packages for films like King Kong, The Wizard of Oz, and upcoming box sets trumpeting The Jazz Singer and Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so happy to present Mr. George Feltenstein.
Well, George, I guess the first question I need to ask, I want to pretend like, you know, I don't know who you are, but I'm certainly aware of your reputation in the industry. And before we get started, I personally want to thank you for everything that you've done for major movie fans like me in bringing these films to the DVD format correctly and taking your time with them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that greatly. We're always striving deliver a good product and continue to try to top ourselves. We're never complacent.
Well, tell me how you got started. I know that your career goes back to the days of Laserdisc and what have you. Just kind of give us like a Cliff Notes version of how you got started in the industry.
Well, when I started in the entertainment industry, I was just out of college and I was 20 years old and I was actually in theatrical distribution. I was hired right out of college to start distributing films to movie theaters that were showing primarily old films, revival theaters and repertory theaters, a business that is pretty much non-existent now, but at that time, that was 1980, early 1981, that was still a very viable and vital business. And the home video business was really in its infancy, and cable television was just starting to have a broader impact on the world. So at that point, the major source for viewing movies other than first-run films that were in theaters or for old movies that were shown on television in miserable 16-millimeter prints, all edited and cut up, was the revival repertory theater. So I worked for a company that is no longer in business called Films Incorporated, And Films Inc. was also a distributor of non-theatrical films, schools and so forth. And so it's a name a lot of people know. But they had the theatrical rights to the Fox Library and the Paramount Library. And I built the library with other films, too. And we had 3 or 4 years of enormous success serving the repertory revival theater market. And I was their national sales manager at age 21. Which was a little bit of a daunting task. And I would say the last time that was a really thriving business was around 1985. And shortly thereafter, I really wanted to get into the home video business. And I sent my resume over to MGM Home Video in New York, which is where I lived at the time and where I grew up. And they called me literally the same day because I messengered the resume over. And I had an interview the next day. They told me they wanted to hire me, and then it took 9 months between them telling me they wanted to hire me till my start date. But I finally got to start, and I left the theatrical business to be in the video business, and I've been in it pretty much ever since, and I'm most grateful for that.
So what was the first project that you worked on in home video that made an impact? I was talking to a friend of yours, and I can't recall his name offhand, but he's a huge Judy Garland fan, and he's participated in a couple of your special editions.
Could it be John Fricke?
You are correct, sir. Yeah, thank you for helping me out there. He was telling me that The Wizard of Oz was like a huge huge seller in the home video format, and later on Laserdisc down the line. Would that be one of them, or is there something that came before that in terms of the first big project that you worked on for home video?
Well, really, The Wizard of Oz, the 50th anniversary edition of The Wizard of Oz was the first time I had worked with John, and I never knew him until he had come to MGM to take a tour of the studio lot. And I prefaced that by saying that I started with MGM Home Video in New York, but within a few months thereafter, they moved 18 employees out from New York to Los Angeles and reestablished MGM Home Video out here in Los Angeles. And it was about a year after that I met John, and a year after that, we released the 50th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz, in which he collaborated with us in preparing the booklet and so forth and so on. And that was really the first mega hit I was involved with, and that was in 1989, because no one had done anniversary editions of movies up until that time, if you can believe it. And we did Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz that same year, and of course we gave birth to a monster, because now something has a 6th anniversary or a 21st anniversary, and ba-boom, you know, it means nothing really anymore. But at that time, it never had been done. But actually, what it started with, my very, very first day I started at MGM Home Video, I had a big job ahead of me, because I was hired specifically to be the director of programming. They didn't really have anyone there that knew anything about the library. So they would go out and license movies from people like Canon Pictures or other small outfits, and put those things out, or whatever new films they had out. And they had not yet released Father of the Bride or Camille or Anchors Away, or, you know, thousands of wonderful movies. So my very first day, they said, okay, we need to put 6 musicals out in November. Which would you recommend? And I said, well, I would definitely recommend you put out The Barclays of Broadway with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And they said, oh, no. I'm being nonspecific when I say they, because I don't want to point anyone out. But I said, oh, no, we've released that already. And, of course, this is my first day there, and I didn't want to seem, disrespectful. And I was very young, and I had this wonderful new job. I didn't want to insult anyone, but I said, I really wish you checked, because I'm certain that it's not available. And they said, well, but it definitely is. And then they double-checked and said, oh, we released it in Japan. And this went on and on and on, and basically no one knew what anyone was doing. And they would often select what they would release by looking in the MGM Story coffee table book and basically opening up a page and putting their finger down and said, let's put that out. the sad part of that is that, not to be, self-complimentary for ourselves here at Warner Home Video, but that kind of mentality is all too pervasive still at most of our other competitors in this town. There are very few people working in the industry, working at the other studios, that really understand their films, understand their library, and we have a very talented group of people here who are expert in their knowledge of the library and their passion for it. So I'm very grateful to be working with such talented people here. And to basically go back to your original question, what I did starting at that point, which was 1986-87, was start to build a release schedule for MGM, where suddenly films were coming out at 1998 on a VHS or beta cassette, and instead of $59.98 or $69.98. And we did the Bette Davis collection, and we did a lot more musicals and James Bond films at lower prices, and all sorts of things. The Forbidden Hollywood series, which we've just started here on DVD at Warner Home Video, all those things came to be. I also got very involved in marketing classic animation to adults instead of as kiddie products. And so all of those innovations took hold, became very successful. And as you indicated earlier, then I became kind of obsessed with the Laserdisc. And while I was at MGM, we were really at the forefront of that business, introducing things that are now commonplace on DVDs, not just letterboxing, but also of music-only tracks, deleted scenes, outtakes, special versions of new movies that had footage not seen in theaters. Those were all things that we did at MGM first before anyone else, and I was very proud of that. The business eventually changed toward the dawn of DVD, and MGM had gained new ownership and new management toward the middle of the 90s. And I had just finished executive producing a theatrical film, which was That's Entertainment 3. I'm not credited on the movie because they don't usually let studio executives have credits on films. If they bring them to fruition, you don't see Robert Evans' name on The Godfather. You don't see Alan Ladd Jr.'s name on Young Frankenstein or Star Wars. But accordingly, you don't see my name on That's Entertainment 3. But that was really a dream come true project. But unfortunately, the new management that came into MGM in the mid-90s had no respect for the kind of work that I like to do, and I was no longer comfortable staying there. And I also knew that the classic MGM library, everything that was pre-86, belonged to Turner Entertainment, and MGM had licensed that when Turner bought MGM and then sold the name back to Kirk Kerkorian. And so MGM Home Video actually didn't own the MGM library, they just distributed it. So I actually then went to work for Turner, not knowing that Time Warner was about to buy Turner. But to make a very, very long story short, I moved with the library. The library was bought by Warner Brothers. And after a transitional period where I was working on CD soundtracks, documentaries for Turner Classic Movies, and serving in an advisory capacity to Warner Home Video, it was in early 2002 I finally got to come here and open up the vault and start getting the classic films released on DVD. So that, in a nutshell, is the capsule version of what I've been doing for the last 15 to 20 years.
And it sounds, you know, that's where I first heard your name, George, because back when Rhino used to do a lot of these soundtracks for Showboat and what have you, I definitely noticed your name, and it's like it rung a bell back from, you know, the Laserdisc days. And I didn't, you know, collect Laserdisc, but I was like, you know, green with envy because you had all these extras and bonuses, but just, you know, the discs were just so doggone expensive. So, you know, DVD, you know, the format has just been, you know, wonderful to folks like me that can afford these kind of things now. And it's been wonderful to, you know, you guys going back and revisiting these laser things, and sometimes even doing them better, you know, than they were for Laserdisc.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge improvement over the Laserdisc. And we've been trying to, you know, it's great too, because I still have the Laserdisc to use as a reference to show my colleagues as we're working on new DVD releases what I want to do. Like, you know, let's have these particular songs put on with a stereo audio mix as enhanced content. And the beautiful thing is we're able to release what used to cost $125 for a Laserdisc box comes out as a DVD for $19.97. And that's right. Pretty terrific. The value of it is magnificent, and the fact that we're able to bring it to such a wider audience. And we've got miles to go. And the Rhino soundtrack venture is still going. I still oversee that as well. We released a big box set where we redid the That's Entertainment box from 1995, and I added about 22 tracks that had never been heard anywhere before. Right. But there haven't been the amount of single releases that there once were, simply because the record industry has taken such a terrible hit due to piracy. But we have made things available through iTunes, and there probably will be a few more Rhino soundtracks this year from the Warner Brothers Library, a.k.a. the Turner Library, that I know a lot of the fans are waiting for. So I'm working on multiple fronts.
Can you tell us, speaking on the audio front, what we may be expecting in terms of soundtrack releases?
Well, I'm hoping that we'll be able to get to the two that I really want to do this year and have support from Rhino are Words and Music and Till the Clouds Roll By, which are the kind of glaring omissions from the great MGM musicals that haven't popped up yet. And I held back on those because in our holdings of pre-recordings, we have virtually nothing on Words and Music. And we have about half of Till the Clouds Roll By, which makes me have to seek alternative sources, playback discs, acetates, sometimes the film soundtrack album. But of course, it's always got to be complete. And I have gathered enough source material on both films to finally do both soundtracks with good sound quality and many, many outtakes. So I'm hoping that those will come out this year through Rhino.
Well, George, I know that you just came off a big chat with a home theater forum, and there's several questions I want to ask you about specific titles, and hopefully you can give us a bit of a scoop here on something. I can definitely hold back on posting this if there's something that has a specific date for an announcement. But let me just go ahead, and there's a couple of films that I'm interested in that I didn't see any kind of notation on as far as the transcript. And one is this great silent movie from 1928 called The Crowd. Any word about that?
Well, we kind of did address that. The Crowd, The Wind, The Big Parade, Greed, The Student Prince in Old Heidelberg, Woman of Affairs, Flesh and the Devil, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, 1921 version, and the 1925 Son of Ben-Hur. All of those were done under the auspices of Kevin Brownlow and David Gill as Tim Silent. Now, we have released a few of them. Ben-Hur is Disc 3 in our Ben-Hur DVD 2 years ago, and two of the Garbos. But we really want to redo all the transfers and get, hopefully, Kevin's involvement through his company Photoplay, because I think that he has the best sense of how exactly those films should look and be presented, and he did a wonderful job in 1986 or 87 when they first did those transfers. But those are one-inch analog PAL masters, which we obviously can't use for a DVD. So they've got to be upgraded, and I'm hoping that we've been having long discussions with Kevin and his partner Patrick Stanbury at Photoplay to, you know, get them involved in creating new versions for the modern technology of those great classic films. And I'm passionate about silent film. How all those silence got released on VHS and laser in the past, that was me. And here we are 20 years later, and I'm trying to get them out on DVD. So they will come, but I don't know when. And it won't be any time fairly soon. It will certainly won't be this year. Hopefully next.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed for that. George, I know that it's the 80th anniversary of the jazz singer, and it's my understanding that that will be coming this year?
Almost certainly. It'll be just in time for the birthday, which is October 6th. And that won't be our street date. It's just October 6th, 1927 was the night the jazz singer opened in New York. And so sometime around that date, we'll be coming out with a three-disc deluxe edition of The Jazz Singer that's going to be stuffed with all sorts of extras and new material that's really going to make everyone who is passionate about material from that era very, very happy. There will be a lot of material on there that hasn't been seen publicly since the late 20s. And there will be new content created in terms of documentaries and so forth. So it's a huge, really a huge milestone, landmark in the history of American popular culture, the history of Warner Brothers, and the history of Hollywood. And we have to acknowledge it accordingly. And the film has been restored. It looks amazing for its age. It sounds better than it ever has because we redid the soundtrack using Vitaphone discs that were in pristine condition, which came from a personal collector. And all of this was done in conjunction with UCLA, and I'm terribly excited about what we plan to do and everything we plan to do around that.
You know, I've been keeping up with the restoration efforts, and I just think it's amazing when you come up with these things like these, you know, pristine Vitaphone vinyl records or acetates or whatever, you know. What has been like, you know, in your career at working at both Turner, MGM, Warner, what's the most amazing discovery or the thing that's really excited you in terms of a discovery that you've encountered over the years?
That's a great question, and I there's no single answer. I think I do have to say probably one of the most exciting things that ever happened was when I, and this was probably 18, 19 years ago, when I discovered that all the MGM pre-recordings, or most of them, still existed on that they had been transferred to audio tape from the optical era, well, for the most part, and then finding out that they were recorded in multiple channels, specifically The Wizard of Oz, and not all the films, but some of them had been recorded that way. And when I was about 14 years old, I went to see That's Entertainment in 70 millimeter at the Ziegfeld Theater in New York the day that it opened. It was a day that changed my life. But I sat there in the theater, and they're showing a clip from the Harvey Girls, the actress in Topeka and the Santa Fe, and I knew I was hearing real separated stereophonic sound. I was hearing Judy Garland's voice coming from the front of the theater, the chorus was coming from the side, and the orchestra was all over the theater, and I was already quite a precocious little runt who knew that stereophonic sound didn't arrive to the movies until This Is Cinerama in 1952, II or The Robe in 1953, notwithstanding the experiments Disney had done with Fantasia. And so I said, how is this possible? I just could not understand it.
Okay, this is your podcast host breaking in with semi-breaking news about the Jazz Singer package that George has just talked up. Since our chat back in February, I've had a chance to see some promotional material for what's going to be included on this set, and let me tell you, it is nothing short of phenomenal. The movie has been completely restored. The audio has been taken from Vitaphone discs that were in near perfect condition, as George said. There's going to be a commentary track, rare shorts with Al Jolson, many featurettes and shorts on sound technology, many coming from the Warner archives, the classic Looney Tunes cartoon, I Love to Sing Ya, a brand new documentary, which I'm very excited about, called The Dawn of Sound, that covers the period between the late 1890s, I believe, and 1927, which saw the beginning of sound in film, and much, much more. If you go to thehometheaterforum.com, do a search on the Jazz Singer, and you'll be able to track down threads that will lead to visuals of the package, which is going to be the historical reissue of a 2007 hands down. I'm going to put a link to both. I'm going to put links, which I'm trying to say here, on both our website and our blog for those of you who want to order, or pre-order, I should say, this title via Amazon. It comes out on October 16th. Can't wait. Now, a little background on the second half of our interview coming up. While trying to make some audio adjustments, I cut George off momentarily, but when I got him back, he was still talking it up, and the sound problems were gone. And I thought, cool. But later on, after I got home from work and checked out the recording, there was only my voice and no George to be heard. And you can just imagine the sheer terror on my face. But I noticed a little bit of activity in the waveforms that looked to be completely silent. And via the magic of Adobe Audition, I was able to salvage his audio and remove most of the hiss from the second half of our chat. So let's rejoin George and myself in progress as he's talking about the Meet Me in St. Louis soundtrack, and I'll be back with some personal comments on some of what we talked about at various points.
As the first soundtrack album ever for me, St. Louis, all in stereo. And you fast forward 10 years after that, 2004, here I add to that the amazing technology developed here at Warner Brothers called Ultra Resolution, which perfectly aligns the Technicolor separations of the original yellow, cyan, and magenta, black and white camera negative. And we also redid the sound yet again in stereo and had an even more superior presentation of Meet Me in St. Louis. So the discovery of the MGM audio, I think, was phenomenal. Then when Warner Brothers bought Turner, that meant that the pre-49 Warner Brothers library, which had been wandering through various ownerships between 1956 and 1996, came home. And when Warner Brothers once again owned its older films, it behooved people here on the lot to go into the archives and see if we had any, if there were any pre-49 recordings surviving. And they found the original recording sessions for Dooley Wilson doing As Time Goes By.
Right.
And we found some Star and Stage stuff, and we found some Yankee Doodle Dandy stuff. Most of it was gone, but they found more than they expected. And that was a huge, huge surprise. The fact that we're still finding things, we are still finding things that we didn't know about, is tremendously exciting. And then, of course, I say the most exciting thing for me, honestly, is when the finished product is produced, 300 or 400 people have touched the product from inception to actually putting the product on the shelf in the store, and then when the people buy it and start raving about it, that is the most gratifying thing of all. That is what we work for.
Mm-hmm.
And with the uniform chat now, I look forward to getting the feedback from the consumer so we can know if we're doing a good job. And having done 7 or 8 chats prior to the one we did this week, the amount of people who took the time to say thank you was enormously gratifying. And those people that did have some minor complaints had very valid questions, which we were pleased to be able to answer to give the consumer a better understanding of what we face when we have a particular title going to DVD. For instance, when we did the Garbo film in the fall of 2004, we spent a huge amount of money on that because it was her centennial. But those films are so popular, and the negatives had been printed from so many times that whatever film elements we had to work with could only yield results of a certain quality. There was never going to be that enormous velvety perfection that they originally had. And that was painful to deal with. But nonetheless, we feel that if the consumer understands what we try to do and what we're up against, there's a better chance that they will be more supportive of our efforts and understand why something is the way it is, and not to say, Warner is fucking off. So it is something that we're very cognizant of.
Well, George, we know about you, or people in certain circles know about, your efforts and stuff like that. Tell us about some of the people behind the scenes whose names aren't familiar to us, heroes of yours that have helped make these special editions like King Kong and That's Entertainment a reality.
Well, the first person that I have to acknowledge within Warner Brothers would be Ned Price, who's our VP of Mastering. And coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, Ned and I met 20 years ago when I first started at MGM. He was there too. And we moved out from New York to Los Angeles together amongst 15 other people who were doing the track.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed at MGM for 2 years and he went to Warner Brothers. We stayed friends. And, for the last 10 years, we've been working together again. Ned is a consummate professional, incredibly talented, and is doggedly devoted to his job, and he's the one who's responsible for finally finding the great quality preprint elements on King Kong. He's the one who sets the bar level for our quality being as excellent as it is. And he doesn't just handle the mastering of, classic titles from the library. He handles everything, whether it's a television show, new or old, or a movie, brand new or old or whatever. He's responsible for all that, and he does a tremendous job. Another person who I would mention, who is no longer with the company because he retired, but is Roger Mayer.
Oh yes.
You know who he is?
I know who he is.
Oh, great. He was also my direct boss for 5 years in the years I worked for Turner Entertainment Company. And while I was on my way to Warner Home Video. And he's really the father of film preservation, because MGM and Disney were the only studios that started preserving all their nitrate back in the 60s. And Roger was chiefly behind that. So as Warner Brothers bought Turner, Roger went to Barry Meyer, who's the head of the studio, and he said, you've got to please continue this film preservation program. And Warner Brothers really wasn't in a film preservation mode at the time because they didn't own their own library. Everything they owned was safety films for the most part. But
Roger's persistence paid off, because it did get Warner Brothers to make an enormous financial commitment to take care of the company assets, for which all very, very grateful. And I worked with a team of amazing people, like my adorable colleague Ronnie Sasser, sitting across the table from me, who gets us the best publicity in the world. And that's why Warner Products is known so well, because of the publicity we get.
Right.
I have marketing colleagues, creative services colleagues who create the amazing packaging you see, like on the Astaire Rogers collection. And there's people in our operations department who make sure that the masters get to the plant, and people in our DVD production department who, make sure that all the masters are perfectly created so there aren't any problems. And then there's people like Paul Hemstreet and Michael Crawford who help, they run our DVD special features division. Paul runs it for the entire company, and Michael is his direct report. He's the director of DVD special features, and the two of them are the reason why we have Superman II, the Richard Donner cut. They're the reasons why we're going to have amazing enhanced content on Blade Runner coming this fall. And they also help create the material you see on the Looney Tunes releases and so forth and so on. So there are, I could tell you about all these other departments, but it's really important to salespeople, so many people, accounting, billing, shipping, hundreds of people work to make these magic things happen. And it's an enormous undertaking, so that when people say, oh, well, why isn't this on DVD or why isn't that on DVD? They don't know how hard it is, though, and how expensive it is to make that final result happen. And also, Ned is the head of the mastering group, but he's got a team under him that have to analyze all the elements. And, they work, they're split up into teams. Somebody would be working on this film, somebody would be working on that film. And then they also search archives all around the world to find missing footage that we don't have. Case in point being City for Conquest, which we released in the summer of 2005 in our Warner Tough Guys collection. That had a prologue and epilogue that was found in Germany that no one had seen since 1940.
Wow.
Cut out to the 1947 reissue. These folks are constantly on the trail for this material. So it's an enormous undertaking for everyone here. Everybody works very, very hard. So it's very gratifying to know the public really appreciates our efforts.
The home video industry has its ups and downs, and how do you keep this product coming? How do you make it viable? I mean, I think it's just amazing, with the cutbacks and stuff that, are inevitable when, you have the economy going through, its ups and downs. Why are you guys able to keep this wonderful stuff coming? I mean, it's amazing.
Well, we have two things that work in our favor. The first is, we have the world's largest film library, with over 6,750 feature films, not to mention cartoons, shorts, etc.
Right.
Or television programs. So we're blessed. Warner Brothers really represents three studios, not one. Warner Brothers is Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers is also MGM through 1986, because you can count on your two hands the important films MGM released since 1986. Sadly, it's a company that exists in name only. So we're Warner Brothers, we're MGM, and to a smaller extent, we're RKO. And so when you're dealing with those three amazing libraries, there's really no end in sight. Now, point two is, and this relates to point one also, is that prior to my direct involvement here, the company had chosen to focus on newer films and not release classics because they were waiting for player penetration in the DVD market to increase. once DVD penetration into American households had become large enough, where we felt it wasn't just the early adopter who wanted their bells and whistles and 521 science fiction and special effects, we could start exploring Errol Flynn and John Garfield and James Cagney and Joan Crawford and Greta Garbo, Gene Harlow, etc., etc. So the combination of holding back and that we have how much, most of the other studios have scraped the bottom of the barrel. You know, they're re-releasing something for the second or third time.
Right.
Or they're releasing something that no one's ever heard of. One studio in particular has some westerns coming out, and it's a library I'm very familiar with because I worked with it once. Yeah, these films, I've never heard of them. There's nobody in them that anyone's ever heard of. And how they expect anybody to buy them is beyond me, enough to cover their basic costs. Meanwhile, we have hundreds and hundreds of A titles that, you know, even at the rate of 200-250 titles a year, it's going to be a long time before we ever run into any kind of shortage, which is an embarrassment of riches. And it's why we work so hard to try to release as much product as we do, and yet still give it that Rolls-Royce treatment that we try to give every release.
Exactly. Now, I want to start talking about some of the titles that you've got coming up this fall or this summer and, you know, and on down the line. One that I'm really excited about and I've been waiting a long time for is the Mickey Rooney Judy Garland musicals. Can you give us a little sneak peek of that?
Yes, I can. We're finishing it up now, and I will state it here now, since nobody asked about it on the forum specifically, and it's not any kind of secret. Each film will have a new introduction by Mickey Rooney, which is priceless. I mean, it really is. That he's still healthy and bouncing off the walls. We worked with him, I guess it was only last week, I can't keep track of time anymore, to tape the interviews. The film will be loaded with extras. It's going to be all four films plus a bonus disc, and I have to keep something secret because we don't want to, you know, let all the cats out of the bag. But the bonus disc is going to have some real fun stuff on it, and it's going to be a beautiful package. I'm hoping it will be this year's Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers equivalent. I think people hold Mickey and Judy as dear to their hearts as they hold Brad Astaire and Ginger Rogers or William Powell and Myrna Loy. I mean, that those, or Olivia de Havilland and Errol Flynn. Those are, you know, the incandescent light of those pairings will never dim. And, you know, again, we waited for the right time for Mickey and Judy. The time is now. And we've been working on it a very long time. There will be some commentaries, there'll be shorts and cartoons, as there always are. And there'll be a gorgeous presentation with some real fun physical extras as well. So that's something everyone can look forward to.
George is indeed correct. Mickey Rooney is involved extensively in the extras for the Mickey Rooney Judy Garland collection, which comes out of the third Tuesday of September, about a couple of weeks from right now. And oh my goodness, this is going to be a dream set for fans of this incredibly talented duo. The films have been lovingly restored. Two of them, Babes in Arms and Girl Crazy, have commentary from Judy Garland historian extraordinaire John Fricke, whom I had a chance to talk with several years ago. Could not be a nicer fella, and boy, does he know his Judy Garland. So if you haven't had a chance to check out his commentaries on past films like Meet Me in St. Louis and a couple of others that escaped me at the moment, The Wizard of Oz, of course, you're in for a real treat. All of the titles are going to have period-appropriate extras, cartoons, shorts, and what have you, radio broadcast, and so on. And again, Amazon link on both our homepage and our blog if you want to pre-order this terrific for, actually, it's a 5-disc set, and the 5th disc is going to be comprised of classic Judy Garland performances from her entire career. And man, talk about going beyond the call of duty. I mean, just you just can't beat Warner Home Video. It sounds like I'm biased, but folks, they just do great work. And what a way to wrap up 2007 with both the jazz singer and the Mickey Rooney Judy Garland package. And we're not even talking about Blade Runner. We didn't have a chance to really get into the Blade Runner package, which promises to be a real winner. Anyway, back to the remainder of our interview with Mr. Feltenstein, and I'll be back to wrap things up shortly.
I hear there's some Elvis coming. I take it in conjunction with the 30th anniversary of his passing. I will tell you that a few years ago, I had an opportunity to sit down for a couple of hours on the phone with a great gentleman named Malcolm Leo, who is the director of This Is Elvis. Can you confirm to us that that may be one of the products that will be coming?
Yes, absolutely. We're basically going to be releasing a lot of brand new to DVD Elvis products, and among that will be the first DVD release of This Is Elvis.
And nothing that you can tell us beyond that, or do you want to keep some surprises in store?
Well, you know, if people are creative and do a little digging and thinking, we've got an awful lot of unreleased Elvis, and they could probably figure out some of the titles that may be on their way. But it's going to be a big, 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 big promotion. And we're very excited about it. We have a very close relationship with the Elvis Presley Enterprises staff, especially Gary Hovey and Jack Stone, who've been running EPD for many years.
Right.
And we've been working together with them, planning this set of releases for a long time. And I think the fans will be very pleased.
I'm hoping, fingers crossed, you know, it gets requested a lot of times in certain circles that I run around with, you know, when is Elvis on Tour coming out? And that's definitely a highly requested title.
Yeah, well, I will say that that is not part of our plan here, because we have an enormous a treasure trove, basically, of unseen footage from that film. You know, because they shot 6 concerts.
Right.
And made 1 film. And we have every frame of film that they shot. And it's all been cataloged. And it's all been gone through and identified. And we want to do something spectacular with that, like we did when we created the Elvis That's the Way It Is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm really looking forward to that on down the line, and I'm one of those people that loves to wait for something, you know, if it's done right. And you know, the special edition of That's the Way It Is was just it's probably one of my favorite DVDs.
Well, thank you. I actually was one of the executive producers on that project, along with my former boss Roger Mayer, and it was a real dream come true. And with the exception of always loving Viva Las Vegas and Jailhouse Rock, I really wasn't an Elvis fan. I was a fan of the money his movies made. But I never seen that. Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the most important parts of my job is to make money for the company.
Right.
And Elvis films always make money, but the thing is that I think they had been oversaturated on VHS, and the thing that was amazing about That's the Way It is that the original film didn't give you enough performance. We wanted real people to really see how talented he was. And we created that not on video, but it was created on film. There's a 35mm negative from which we can always make new prints with a Dolby 5.1 digital track. And when I saw the final film with the final mix on a huge, huge screen, it really nailed down for me what it must have been like to see Elvis live. And it totally changed my opinion of him, my feelings about him and his work. And we want to give Elvis on Tour that same kind of special treatment. And yet, because Elvis on Tour in and of itself was such a great film, it was an Academy Award nominee, it won a Golden Globe, we're not going to change the film except to remaster it, make it look great, make it sound great, but we really want to create at least one, if not two, companion pieces from the material that was not used. So that's going to take a lot of time and a great deal of money. So those plans are far in the future, but we're hoping maybe, I know it sounds far away, but it really isn't, 2010 would have been Elvis's 75th birthday. That's probably when we'll do that film. Although we could do it sooner, it's very possible.
And boy, what an Elvis bonanza this turned out to be. The titles that George couldn't mention at the time are all new titles to DVD, and the movies are Tickle Me, Charo, Girl Happy, Live a Little, Love a Little, Stay Away Joe, and Kissing Cousins. And I got to tell you guys, these transfers look absolutely fantastic. But there's more. Of course, This Is Elvis came out, as George, as I inquired about that particular title, because it's a huge favorite of mine. And both the theatrical version, which has never been on home video to my knowledge, and the extended cut, which came out on VHS that had around, I guess, around 41 extra minutes or something like that. Both versions of the film are on a terrific two-disc set. Also, That's the Way It Is is out in both its original version and the marvelous 2001 restoration that had a lot more music, live performances, like George said. It's absolutely phenomenal. If you want to see Elvis at his best in the early 70s, this is the one to get. And also, a couple of titles, probably the most beloved Elvis movies of all time, Jailhouse Rock and Viva Las Vegas, out in deluxe editions with commentary, special featurettes, and the films look like they just came out of the lab yesterday. Great, great stuff. And I'll tell you another thing that was a big surprise about the Elvis releases. Most of the films had little multi-page booklets with the publicity photos, quotes from the movies, and also some lobby cards, lobby type cards with the publicity photos of Elvis on the set, certain scenes in the film, and just what a nice treat for Elvis fans like myself. And if you haven't yet checked those out or had a chance to check them out, I'm going to put Amazon links for all the Elvis movies that have come out from Warner Home Video, and they'll make great Christmas gifts for the Elvis fans in your family if they haven't had a chance to buy them yet, or maybe they don't even know. Keep it a secret. It'll be just between you and me. Okay. All right. Anyway. Okay. Back to the remainder of our interview with Mr. Feltenstein, and I'll be back to wrap things up shortly. So once again, back to George.
It seems like every chat that you guys had with the Home Theater Forum, it seemed like somebody would always bring up the Dark Shadows movies, no matter what, even if you had no plans for them, but I hear they're finally set to go. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yes. We always knew there was demand, and we always wanted to do it, but we knew that it would require, you know, a fairly hefty investment because the original negative was faded and we would need to make new film elements and a new transfer from that. But we have done that. And, you know, we wanted it to be 16:9 in proper aspect ratio, and the fans will finally get what they want. So that'll be out sometime before the end of the year. We always said we would do it. We just couldn't promise when, and now we can say it'll be this year.
Now, another favorite package of mine from last year was your Legends, Horror Legends of Hollywood, if I'm not mistaken. Is there a follow-up of sorts for that down the line, speaking of horror?
Yes. It won't be this year. It'll be next year in 08. But you'll see a lot of the plan is, and I don't like to, you know, set anything in stone because things change around here all the time for a myriad of reasons, but we're looking at titles like with more Karloff and Lugosi, like You'll Find Out and The Walking Dead, Zombies on Broadway, as well as The Beast with Five Fingers, Frankenstein 1910. So a lot of, we've got about 8 or 10 earmarked for Halloween of 08 due as a classic set, and I think that people will really enjoy those.
Well, George, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the program, and we'd love to have you back as we get further on into the year so you can tell us more details about things as they get confirmed.
Anytime. It's always a pleasure speaking to you.
Once again, my very special thanks to Warner Home Video's George Feltenstein, who was beyond generous with his time. And I really do hope that George will come back on the program in time to discuss future Warner titles that he will be no doubt excited to talk up. Before we start wrapping up the show here, I want to extend thanks to a couple of people who helped make this chat possible. I want to thank Ronnie Sass and Jennifer Gonzalez, both from WHV. They were very kind and generous in setting up this chat, and my deepest thanks go out to them. Okay, folks, that wraps it up for another DVD Marquee special. Next time, we'll return to our regular format. We've got a lot of TV on DVD to talk about next time. Shows like Grey's Anatomy, their third season, Desperate Housewives, season 3. We've got Friday Night Lights, the complete first season, and many, many more that I'm forgetting. It's almost going to be a TV on DVD spectacular in preparation for the fall premieres coming up. Great way to catch up on what you may have missed, or if you want to kind of, you know, get yourself up to date before the new seasons start for these particular shows. And we're not going to ignore current theatrical fare, or theatrical fare coming on home video for the first time. Some of the titles that we've got to look forward to are Paul Verhoeven's Black Book, the critically acclaimed film by the Basic Instinct director, and also the DVD debut of a film that I think is the best film of 2007 thus far, Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof, which was originally part of Grindhouse, but for some reason the Weinstein Company has decided to break up both Death Proof and Planet Terror into two separate releases. Kind of a bummer, but hopefully sometime in 2008 they'll do a Grindhouse special edition and bring both of these films back together again. Fingers crossed. Anyway, folks, thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate you listening. Don't forget to check out our new blog. You can access it from our homepage. Don't forget about our MySpace page. We're adding great new stars each and every day. Fan pages, official fan pages, and fan pages from ordinary folks who do it completely as a labor of love, much like the show you're listening to. Thanks to thehometheaterforum.com as always for their support, and as always, I thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Jeffrey Rosato. Until we meet again, amigos.